This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
And mellowed out on his opinion over the years.
Who mellowed out on his opinion?
Carlos Cavazo about Shane. Yeah.
I didn't know he auditioned for Ozzy.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Right before, because, excuse me, hang on one second.
Take your swag. Swig. Oh,
Gillis ended up getting it. Bernie Torme was originally brought in by Don Arden, who was still managing at the time. They were getting ready to go out and do the Speak of the Devil tour, but then they held auditions both for the tour and to see if there was a permanent guitarist that they could find. And a lot of the guys in LA heard about it beforehand. Almost nobody knew. Well, no, or most of them didn't know that, or possibly none of them, that it was going to be a set of shows doing strictly Black Sabbath songs. So Carlos learned all the Rhodes material from the first two Ozzy albums, showed up for the audition, couldn't play any Black Sabbath songs, but was proud of what he learned. And, you know, they had to do these shows in literally 2 weeks, and he outright refused to learn the Sabbath material. And I guess he thought they were going to work with him a little bit because learning the road stuff. And she was like, nope, see ya.
Knowing what we know about a certain Mrs. Osborne now, no, that wouldn't have happened. It's her way or no way.
They might have I think he might have gotten some leeway if he'd have been willing to learn it. But when he flat out refused, that was it.
No, there you go.
But on the other hand, I don't really blame her either. As the manager at the time, I mean, they had 2 weeks to roll and they needed somebody who knew the songs. They didn't have time to fuck around with anyone that was like, oh no, I'm not learning Snowblind. That's stupid.
If I was alive at the time, I would have aced that audition. I'd have been like, I'm your guy. Knowing what I know now. Yeah. I wouldn't go.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the intro.
All right.
I'll let the bass play out this time. Welcome to Rat Salad Review. Hi, Lou. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Wayne. Hello, Greg.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Good evening. And today, we're finally doing this Ozzy show that we've been
finally.
Trying to do.
Finally. After 3 weeks.
Blizzard of Oz and Diary of the Madman. This has been like a month trying to get this show to you know, go. So here it is. Blizzard of Oz, Diary of the Madman.
Part one of our five-part Ozzy series.
It's going to be five parts.
Well, yeah, he has 10 studio albums total.
Oh, my God. You didn't tell me that.
Oh, are we not doing all 10 studio
albums? Oh, my God. I got to listen to the fucking Osmosis.
Yeah, you got to listen to that.
And what's the one after that?
Down to Earth.
Down to Earth. And what's the one after that?
Black Rain.
Oh, my God. And what's the one after that
Scream.
One?
Scream.
What's the one after Scream?
One of the worst freaking albums I ever heard.
Which is?
Ordinary Man.
The one that Papa Don, the Greek god, liked.
And sir, in his latest one, Patient.
Sir, I love you, but I question your taste.
No, but it's going to be a long show, but it'll be fun. There's some songs I like off of those newer albums, so we'll see how it goes.
We're going to tell you all the reason why we're doing this is because we are shilling for views. You That's understand right. me? We want you to watch.
That's right.
And we will do what we have to within reason and legal parameters to make you watch. So, yes, we're selling out and shilling by covering the Ozzy discography. So thank you. Fuck you. Bye. All right, let's do this.
Now we're going to get sued by Cornette. Thanks.
Hello, Catman. Stephen B. News, Stephen B. News, Stephen B. News, Stephen B. News. Sorry.
But, Greg, we've been talking about this show for a while, doing Ozzy, and I know you really wanted to do it. So, you know, you're a huge fan of Blizzard of Oz. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, Diary is actually my favorite overall. Okay. That's both of them are essential albums for any metal fan. And Blizzard of Oz, as good of an album it is, and as much as I love it, is like that perfect building block that goes from 1970s hard rock heavy metal into setting the tone for the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then Diary of a Madman kind of built on that and came full circle. But I mean, you know, there's stuff on Blizzard that's a little bit more reminiscent to things that would have been done in the 70s, like Goodbye to Romance, shit like No Bone Movies, where I don't want to call it lighter, but it's more. And now when I use the term AOR here, people, I'm not talking about keyboards. I'm not talking about shit like the fucking Macaulay Schenker group that has nothing to do with it. AOR originally stood for album-oriented rock, stuff like Boston, Sabbath, that wouldn't have a lot of radio airplay at that time. Well, actually, I probably shouldn't have used Boston as an example. But anyway.
Thank you for saying AOR and not ARO, like Manny constantly says, that we have to correct him.
But, you know, it shows that evolution as they were moving into something new. And also, I don't know if you guys are big enough Quiet Riot fans where you really listen to like QR2 or Randy Rhoads' live solos, but it's really cool to hear his ideas from Quiet Riot, how it turned into, and it's nothing more than riffs and chord progressions, but how some of that stuff turned into Goodbye to Romance and parts of Crazy Train and Revelation Mother Earth. But, you know, just his forceful classical way of playing is out of this world. I mean, and, you know, on the heels of what Eddie Van Halen had done just two short years before, it's just mind blowing. And it's a monster of an album. And even though I'm not the biggest fan of Ozzy as a person, I mean, these three guys here, Kerslake ended up playing on it, but he didn't write the songs with them. He wrote on Diary, so I don't know if you can rip. But anyway, they were doing something new, really forward thinking, and it's just magic on here.
Yeah.
And well,
go ahead.
Ozzy. Even though he isn't, we all know he doesn't really write the songs and all that, but he still came up with some good lines and followed the melodies well, you know, and he's got that ethereal haunting voice, and he was at the top of his game here again. I mean, he was still sleeping under the drum riser all drunk while they were recording and rehearsing, but he doesn't sound like he's about to fade away like he did on Never Say Die.
Yeah. You mentioned Eddie Van Halen, and he felt like he was a copycat, basically. But what do you think he really was a copycat?
No, I feel more like Randy was, and this is something that's kind of hard to make this point in general, because Randy died so young. As amazing as his playing on Blizzard and especially Diarrhea is, he still hadn't hit his peak yet, whereas Eddie Van Halen, you have the beginning, kind of what he fucked off and did with keyboards and different shit for years, and then came back full circle at the end of the 90s there, because, and, you know, even coming back to the beginning with more raw stuff on A Different Kind of Truth. But I would say Randy was more of the Ritchie Blackmore school, honestly. He had a different flair to his playing. I don't think he was a copycat of Eddie at all. Granted, there's some similarities, but it's whether it's Quiet Riot or Ozzy, you pay me a Randy track and you play me an Eddie track, and I can tell you who's who. I mean, other than the way it's amped up and they were both kind of flashy, I really don't think they sound similar, to be honest.
Yeah. Lou, you being a guitar player, what do you hear?
No similarities whatsoever. Yeah. And I know that we've discussed this when we had our Randy Rhoads retrospective last year. I mentioned that they were considered the two hotshot guitarists of the LA scene in the mid to late 70s. And Randy was a school teacher, a music teacher, I mean. He taught in his mother's music school in Musonia, while Eddie was slugging it out in the backyard parties in Pasadena and, you know, playing the Starwood and Gazzari's and all those places. You know, I heard of a story once where they actually met, and Randy asked Eddie, how do you get your guitar to stay in tune with the tremolo arm? And Eddie at the time didn't want to let his secrets out. So at the time he'd actually play with his back. He'd play his solos with his back to the audience. I read this in many issues of Guitar World, and they constantly reiterated this fact. And he didn't want to tell Randy, and Randy thought that was an insult. And at the time he thought there was one guitarist that was better than Eddie, and that was George Lynch, who would end up joining Dokken later on. Yes. Yes. Hmm. Kevin DeBrow was actually even quoted as saying that in an issue of Guitar World when he was promoting the Quiet Riot Randy Rhoads Years CD. There is the funny story that there was a picture of Eddie's face on Randy Rhoads's wah pedal in the late 70s. So he'd hit it with that much more ferocity. But it wasn't Eddie as a player that he didn't like. He just thought he wasn't a very friendly person. But yeah, because he's like, you know, we're all guitar players. It's not a competition. It's like, you know, we all go out and we all do what we can do. You know, no snobbery about it. You know, and Randy was a joker. He was a practical joker. And, you know, you heard about some of the ribs that he would do on tour and backstage. You know, I mean, he was just a fun loving lovable guy who looked like David Cassidy with a perm, but still, man, could that guy play guitar? You know, and we actually spoke with Steve Rosen about this, where in a 1982 interview promoting Diver Down, where Eddie expressed sympathy for Randy's loss, and then he said he tried to copy me. And I've mentioned this in the interview that Randy wasn't going out of his way to copy Eddie. People were coming to take lessons from Randy, asking me, can you teach me Running with the Devil and all of Van Halen One? So that's really what it was. So, you know, I think if the two of them were still alive today, it is possible that there would have been, I don't think rekindling is the right word, but I think there would have been some kind of compromising situation where they both would have admitted respect for each other because of longevity or where their careers ended up taking them, albeit Randy's much shorter, unfortunately. But no, I like Greg said, I can hear two completely different guitar players when I hear Randy and Eddie.
Yeah, I never got the comparison either. I can hear a little couple things that maybe like the finger tapping type stuff, but otherwise I don't really hear a similarity between those two. But both awesome, great guitar players, and only one of them was with Ozzy, and that was Randy Rhoads. So, Blizzard of Oz. Let me go through my notes here. Ozzy's debut, great album that showed Ozzy can make it on his own without Black Sabbath. With Randy Rhoads as his new guitarist, the possibilities are endless at what could have been done for the future. The rest of the band, Bob Daisley on bass, Steve Kerslake on drums, and Don Airey on keyboards, Ozzy really put a great band together. Even though I think it's a great debut because you have songs like I Don't Know, the classic Crazy Train, Goodbye to Romance, Suicide Solution, and Mr. Crowley. There are some clunkers like No Bone Movies, Steal Away the Night, and Revelation Mother Earth. And I know Greg's probably just rolled over in his grave, even though he's not dead.
I'm going to chew your head off when it's my turn to talk.
Revelation isn't a terrible song, but I think it's a tad bit unfocused. And then and they try something a little too adventurous this early on. They do something a little similar on the next album. We'll get to that later. But it's a classic debut album that proved Ozzy didn't need Black Sabbath. And this same year, I don't know what I wrote here. This same year, this album was released. Black Sabbath, at least for this moment in time. I don't know what the fuck I wrote there. It makes absolutely no sense to me. It doesn't matter. So anyway, the debut albums, I really enjoy it. Like I said, there are some clunkers on there, but it's a great debut. You know, it's got some classic songs. So what about Revelations?
Greg, you go first.
Well, first of all, to go back to, yes, Ozzy didn't need Black Sabbath. However, he still needed a good band behind him.
He did. When he got it here.
Came in to get him Bob Daisley, because as great as Randy is, this wouldn't have come together the way it did without Bob, who Ozzy continued to use up through what the
no
hell?
No More Tears.
No More Tears. Thank you. I was about to say No Rest for the Tears. I'm like, no, that's not. See, I haven't smoked pot in like a week and it's messing with my brain. But anyway, no, Revelation Mother Earth is an amazing song, and it really foreshadows not just where Ozzy was going, because it does. Well, where the band Blizzard of Oz was going on Diary of a Madman, but kind of where metal was going in general. You know, it takes that multi-part short epic that was big in rock in the 70s and metalizes it a little bit more and takes you on this journey. And Randy just does some amazing stuff on the guitar there, man.
Yeah, no, he definitely does. There's some really cool parts there. It just doesn't seem like it was written together. It just seems like there was parts written and then they just put it together in a certain way. And it just, I don't know. It could have been less clunky to me. I don't know.
Interesting opinion. I don't feel it's clunky at all. I think it flows perfectly. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's four parts that come together to make one whole experience. You know, you have the intro, the mother, please forgive them. Then you have the part where he goes into tritones. Then you have that nice breakdown where you hear the piano ballad. The piano-esque stuff going on, and then all of a sudden you break into the outro where Randy just freaking kicks it in a high gear, and I get goosebumps still when I listen to that song, because as a guitar player, I'm looking for songwriting and I'm also looking for ability, and Randy constructed these gorgeous melodies. And then all of a sudden, it just gave you a swift kick in the nuts with a freaking steel toe boot and just said, acknowledge me, motherfucker. And that's exactly what I think he did on Revelation more than any other song on Blizzard of Oz. Just my opinion.
I would add Mr. Crack to that, but I agree. Otherwise, I think those are the two on here that are the most amazing that way. Especially with his melodies.
I think I'm just so overexposed to Mr. Crowley that I didn't include it, but I'm not denying its greatness.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, even though this album's so old and a lot of these songs are on the radio, are just constant repeating of them. Like you had mentioned earlier, Greg, you constantly hear Crazy Train, so you're not like, you don't want to hear it anymore, kind of, you know?
Cool 108, the radio station at work, both I Don't Know and Crazy Train are on the weekday playlist. Every day at 9:30, Train. Every day at 3 in the afternoon, I Don't Know. They're not bad songs, I'm just kind of ambivalent about them now. Yeah. Although, what's interesting is what you're saying about Revelation. I actually felt about Crazy Train the first time I heard it. The way it opens and then goes into that melody line, I felt connected at all the first time I heard it. I was kind of like, why is everyone so crazy about this song? Everything else on here is so much better. Well, not No Bone Movies. that's a fun tune, but it's not super inventive. And the same thing with Steal Away the Night. They're both more complexly written than a Kiss song, but they're both kind of arena tunes just to get the audience up. They're not as special as the rest of what's on the record, is I guess what I'm getting at. They're both good. Well, No Bone Movies is a filler track. There's no way around that.
Yeah, no bones about it.
But I think you were saying Bob wrote that. I mean, Lee wrote that, right?
Actually, God, I can't remember the name of the session drummer. They actually wrote most of the album. Shit, I should have written down notes. I thought I'd remember it because I talk to and listen to, I mean, talk about and listen to these so much.
It wasn't Frankie Benali, was it?
No.
Because he claims to have written the intro drum track to Over the Mountain off of Diary of a Madman. So I don't know if that's factual or not.
But no, I don't believe that at all. I think that was all Randy. But the one song that Lee Kerslake actually wrote with them during the Blizzard sessions when he came in to record the album was actually the B-side, You Said It All.
Great song.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What do you feel about the rest of the album, Lou?
All right. So, rewind again. Ozzy, I first heard of him when I was a little kid. And again, having two older brothers, it spoiled me because they had the classic Sabbath cassettes and they had all the Ozzy cassettes. I think, trying to remember. First time I saw Ozzy and heard him that I could vividly remember, there was a show on ABC called In Concert, and they actually showed video footage of the Salt Lake City, Utah, Bark at the Moon tour. And the songs that they played were, I don't know, Rock and Roll Rebel and Flying High Again. So I don't know, being the first song, I just immediately fell in love with it. And I looked at Ozzy and I thought he was like a human cartoon character. So like, you know, when you're four or 5 years old and you're seeing this, you're thinking, oh, this is cool. And then, you know, I discovered my brother's cassettes and, you know, at the time his guitarist was Jakey Lee. So this is my first time hearing Randy when I popped in the cassettes and I heard, I don't know, for the first time off Blizzard, fell in love with it instantly. Like, you know, I would just, I would clap, you know, on my legs, you know, just like it's to the beat. So I actually had to thank that for giving me a sense of rhythm. You know, I love, I don't know. I know it's a song that still gets played on the radio today. Sure. But I'm not sick of it yet, which is far more than I can say about Crazy Train, which again, I am sick of it, but I understand the significance of it. By the way, Crazy Train, if anyone has a copy of the Quiet Riot Randy Rhoads Years CD, during Laughing Gas, when Randy comes out of his solo, the riff that they break into is Crazy Train. Oh, yeah. So that's where it came from. Goodbye to Romance. Gorgeous song. You know, I won't turn it off if it comes up on my playlist. D, which is a gorgeous acoustic track. You know, what I loved about Randy was that before Yngwie, he really brought a love of classical music to hard rock and metal. So I got to give him the props for that before anybody else. So, you know, D is a beautiful acoustic track that he dedicated to his mother. And, you know, it is what it is. It's 45 seconds of
just like a little interlude thing.
So. Yeah. Till it breaks into Suicide Solution, which, god damn, what a song. You know, but the funny thing is, though, during the satanic panic, as Manny likes to call it, of the 1980s, you know, there was a controversy that came with this song about Ozzy, you know, putting subliminal messages.
Well, in it. That with Suicide Solution actually happened in 1990. During the Satanic Panic, it was actually the Bark at the Moon album, because that guy killed his neighbors in Canada.
Okay, well, I'm referring to the American case, because the guy, the lawyer, I forget his name, but, you know, completely disreputable, a piece of shit attorney, said that in the during the breakdown, before they break into the final verse, you hear Ozzy saying, get the gun, shoot, shoot, shoot. And that's not what he said at all. He said, get the flaps out. Flaps is a British slang for, as Sheena Easton would call them, her sugar walls. Let's keep it semi-G-rated. And then he was doing like some weird soot, soot, soot type sound effects, because, you know, they were experimenting with all these reverse tracking and all that stuff. So there was no get the gun, shoot, shoot, shoot. And I wish I remember the name of that attorney, because this way, if he was dead, I could go to his gravesite and just piss all over it. But if he's still alive, fuck you anyway. And no, the song is not about Bon Scott and Ozzy dealing with it, because Ozzy didn't write the lyrics.
No, that story is completely false. And it's gone over the years from him saying he wrote it about Bon Scott to, oh, I just contributed this one line specifically about Bon. And both Max Norman, who produced the record, and Bob Daisley have confirmed that no, Bob wrote the lyrics to Suicide Solution.
Yes, the premise of that song being about Bon Scott is about as fake as Sharon Osbourne's constant plastic surgeries. Okay, so give me a break. Now, flip onto side two. Mr. Crowley. I love this song. A little tired of it, but I still love the song, because Randy just kills it. Oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, Suicide Solution, again, have to reference the QR Randy Rhoads album. The song Force of Habit. If you listen to that song, everything from Suicide Solution, it takes from that one. Sure. Mr. Crowley, though, again, love that song. No Bone Movies. Now, I mentioned this to the guys last week. I said, if you replaced that song with Idiot Control Now from Mystery Science Theater 3000, you'd have a much better song selection. I like No Bone Movies, but it's a throwaway track. You know, it's just, it's dumb. It's fun, but it's just like, I'm not going to add it on any of my playlists. Revolution, I already said what I thought about it. So Steel, I'm glad you referenced the right episode. Pod people, it's on Tubi. And then Steal Away the Night. Now, you guys mentioned you weren't too crazy about it. I love the song. I love anthemic songs where, you know, it's a driving rhythm and it's... I compare it to a song like We Belong to the Night from UFO, which is one of my favorite UFO songs, surprisingly off one of my least favorite UFO albums, but one of my favorite songs. And I go for tracks like that. You know, I like the driving, you know, be young, have fun, drink Pepsi type mentality, you know, because I like happy stuff. I do. I mean, I wear black all day. I have black curtains behind me. You know, I think about death quite often, but I'm a happy person. So I like that song.
I don't know, just a little too happy of an ending for me.
But now we're going to talk about something that makes me miserable.
What's that?
So
why is it me?
It's not you this time. But I have two copies of Blizzard of Oz. This one is completely worth owning. This is the 1995 remastering repackaging. It doesn't have any extra special tracks on it. You know, it's got the nice blue, like quilty.
But if you, open it up and that the way they ruined the cover, it's so stupid.
I know, but I love this version of the album because it's the original.
Right.
That being said, this 2002 piece of shit re-recorded, remastered, if it were Spider, it'd be a crawling piece of excrement where Bob Daisley and Lee Kerslake, yes, were replaced with Rob Trujillo and Mike Borden. No offense to both of them, because I think they're both great musicians, but the fact that you guys actually scabbed to be on this album because you were under Sharon's payroll, this is what I think of the album.
Oh my God. There's some good bonus tracks on there.
There's no bonus track. Oh, there's you looking at me, looking at you. But guess what? Stream it, because it's got it. That's the one that has Lee and Bob on it.
But they fixed that issue and they reissued that album again.
There was a backlash to it. That's the only reason why.
That was just wrong. She shouldn't have had them do it. I mean, she can be as pissy as he wants, and I'm glad she wants, and I'm glad Bob and Lee eventually won the case against it, because it just wasn't right.
No.
Both of those bonus tracks are available, by the way, the original singles, or there's also a compilation called Prince of Darkness that contains both You Said It All and You Be Looking at You original versions. And, you know, that version of the album, I can see people that heard it first and don't realize it, but the whole thing sounds wrong.
It sounds horrible.
Yeah.
It sounds like they tried to make it sound like the original album.
Yeah, complete and utter failure.
I mean, it, at least try to tune your damn bass to sound something similar, but Jesus.
And again, that's not taking anything away from Rob Trujillo and Mike Borden as musicians. No, and it sucks
that they're on that, because they're like, you know, especially Mike Borden, maybe he's like one of my favorite drummers, you know, from Faith No More. And I hate to say that, something he's on I don't really like at all, you know.
That's okay. The last Mr. Bungle album. Oh no, he's not. I'm sorry. That's Faith
No
More.
The last Faith No More album sucked anyway. So
okay. So at least we have the first five Faith No More albums.
But Steal Away the Night, I actually do like the song, but I prefer the live version on tribute, and just live versions they did of it in general. Yes, it sounds very bright as compared to the rest of the album. There's just an extra something missing from the studio recording. I still enjoy it on the album. It's a fun song, good anthemic song. It just sounds like it's missing that extra oomph as compared to the rest of the album. And No Bone Movies kind of has a similar sound, but it's just a fun throwaway track to begin with.
Yeah. Hear the engines roar now. Idiot control now. See, that's already an improvement over No Bone Movies.
And I mean, especially coming after friggin' Mr. Crowley of all things.
Right. It's just, yeah, it's the order that they're in. It's just, I don't know. Maybe if they were in the beginning of the album, kind of break it up a little bit more.
Randy blows rock at that point all to hell with his riffs and his chord progressions on Mr. Crowley, and then you come in a ding, 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 no boom. Just shut up, Ozzy. No. But they really didn't have any other material to choose other than that. As a filler track, it could have been a lot worse. And we'll get to that when we get to Bark at the Moon, even though I wasn't alive at that point. But for a filler tune, it's not bad. One point I will disagree with Lou on, though, is Blackmore totally added classical into rock music before Randy did. I mean, sorry, dude. Randy did it in a different way that definitely took it forward and was equally as cool, but Blackmore definitely did it first.
Well, I said that Randy did it for metal. I completely acknowledge what Blackmore did for rock.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that you said metal. I thought you said rock in general. My apologies.
No worries at all. I mean, yeah, of course, I acknowledge Blackmore as the first guy to him and Steve Hackett of Genesis, but more so Blackmore than Genesis because, you know, I mean, come on, Stargazer. That's all I got to say. But no, I mean, you know, what Randy did for you know, for classical within metal. But, you know, though, you're right. I can't deny what that Blackmore was just as influential towards many metal and hard rock guitars. So I'll meet you halfway on that, definitely. One last thing I want to say about this album, with Ozzy being a Brit and Lee Kerslake being a Brit and Bob Daisley being a Brit by way of Australia, mm-hmm. this album does not sound British whatsoever. This sounds like total LA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very glammy-ish in a way.
Oh, totally. I mean, Randy's stamp is all over this. I mean, Bob is almost as important because he helped write all the songs, but it sounds so American. There's no other way to put it. And then, you know, another part of that is probably Max Norman's production, too.
Mm. Mm. You know, and Max Norman does make himself available to go on podcasts and talk about that stuff. I mean, I know he was on The Metal Voice and a bunch of other ones. Be cool to have him on the show.
Yeah, certainly. Actually, Ben was going to hook us up with that, but I don't know what happened with that. I haven't talked to Ben in a while.
I would love to have Max Norman, especially to talk about Rust in Peace, just if we couldn't talk about anything else. But I love D, but I think it should be on side two of this record.
There's too much clunky stuff on side two.
Well, honestly, I mean, if you moved... No Bone movies would work better on side one as a segue between Goodbye to Romance and then into Suicide Solution. Goodbye to Romance followed by D, while those are both good songs and I love them both for different reasons, it's a little too much of that at once. Mm. If it came in on side two and went from Mr. Crowley into Revelation, that's just, I think it would flow better.
Well, also, D and Goodbye to Romance are really not that far apart from each other in terms of structure. D was actually a big part of Randy's solo during Laughing Gas.
Yep.
And you could hear how he expanded D into Goodbye to Romance. So those two songs are just too much alike. I could see that putting D as like a reprise, I guess you could say, of what we heard on Goodbye to Romance if it was positioned on side two. That and especially segueing into Revelation Mother Earth, that could have been a better sequence. Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, and Lou also talked about how we got into these. You know, I knew the original Sabbath. I loved it. And then I was about 10. My neighbor introduced me to both of these albums. And I then, and I really still do now, is Ozzy's kind of a clown, a human cartoon character. Him as a person, he really didn't interest me all that much. But Randy totally just blew me away. Took my mind to a different level. I mean, jaw-dropping.
Yeah, but Ozzy as a cartoon character in the 80s, during watching him on the Bark of the Moon tour, that was cool. That was cool to watch.
I always thought it was cool. I'm not really criticizing him there. I'm more saying that the guitar was a bigger draw for me than Ozzy himself.
He definitely had his pick.
In the chat here, Catman says, crazy Train, you can still hear at hockey games. Matter of fact, he's going to a hockey game in 3 nights. And Pilot 7826, Blackmore is God. Is that true?
I'm not going to deny that. He's in my Mount Rushmore, along with Eddie, Randy, and Tony Iommi.
Very cool. Switching now to Diary of a Madman. Where'd help my notes go? I think this album is a little stronger than Blizzard. It's definitely a little heavier, and there really isn't any clunkers on it. I think Randy Rhoads is a little less flashy here, though. Otherwise, it's a great album. You got Over the Mountain with the drum intro. Every time I hear that, instantly you know what the song is. Flying High Again, You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, which is like a power ballad. I mean, you basically hear these songs on the radio still today. That's how strong this album is. Believer, another great track, S-A-T-O. I think in a way, Lee Kerslake outshines everyone on this album. He's like really doing a lot of these drum things he didn't do too much on the last album. He's really on fire on here. And then the song Diary of a Madman. I think this is kind of what they tried to do with Revelations on the previous album, but it kind of missed the mark. Here they got it done perfectly. It's such a perfect song, switching back and forth from acoustic to electric, just a really catchy song. The songs, I didn't mention Believer and Little Dolls are no slouchers either, but the other songs are just more of my favorites. There's no Bone movie songs on here, thankfully. So a really great album. What about, what do you think, Greg?
This is one of the best albums of all time. I mean, we came in, you know, to record the album, but here they had been on tour and they were able to write the album together, and it came out amazing. They fully matured from what you heard begun on Blizzard of Oz and truly created something that was completely their own and unique. Gone are the little bit of AOR influences, and they totally adapted them to their own style from Over the Mountain through to the title track. I mean, it still pays back to what came before it, but it's its own thing. Yes, Randy is a little bit more restrained here, and I think a lot of that has to do with Lee Kerslake's drumming and, you know, coming in and being able to write with these guys. And but still, I mean, it sucks because he died. I think he would have progressed beyond this, but this is peak Randy Rhoads right here. I mean, I think this is the best stuff he ever played and wrote. I mean, S-A-T-O alone is jaw. Whole record gives me goosebumps. Even Tonight and Little Dolls, which are still great songs, just lesser as compared to Believer, Diary of a Madman, Over the Mountain, Flying High Again. And even in Flying High Again, as complex as some of it is and out of this world as the plane is, I mean, something you can totally headbang along to in the arena, you know?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And this album don't sound as thin either. It's a little bit heavier sounding, you know, it's mixed differently, and which helps it too, because I think, you know, the first album's a little flat, and this one just bumps it up just a little bit more and just makes it sound a lot heavier. Lou? I didn't know I had to tell you.
funny that you're talking about that, because on Blizzard of Oz, I don't know if anyone, I'm sure you guys hear this, but Lee Kerslake was basically the click track. So every song starts off with a click of the drumsticks.
Mm-hmm.
They did not take that out in post.
Yeah. I don't think I really never noticed. I never.
Yes. Every song starts off with, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 on the drumsticks. And again, they were working within a very minuscule budget for that first album, because this is after Sharon found Ozzy half dead in a seedy motel in L.A.
Mm. Well, Don. Straight up did not think he was going to be viable after Sabbath. Because he was still managing Ozzy fully at the time. He kind of thought he was done and over with.
Yeah. But I think this is the greatest album Ozzy ever did, and it is my second favorite album of all time, right under Van Halen's Fair Warning.
Hmm.
And, God damn, I love this album. I mean, when I first started playing guitar, Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman, more so Diary, was constantly in my rotation at home. I had the CD of Blizzard of Oz, so I had that thing scratched to shit. And I had my brother's cassette tape of Diary, and I was just... At 13 years old, 1994, I was just consumed with it. Like, I not that I wanted to be Randy, but I was just like, I just want to know what he did. You know, like I was just studying it and playing along with it. I mean, I still to this day will never properly play the solo for Over the Mountain, you know, and that's one of the most crushing songs I ever heard, from that intro drum fill which is, again, I sincerely doubt was written by Frankie Benali. No offense, Frankie, rest in peace, but no, I'm not going to say you did it. I'll say Carmine Appice did it before you did.
Honestly, Carmine's style would make sense because he's more similar to Kerslake than Benali is. It just, I never believed it from the first time he said it. It does not sound something like Frankie Benali would ever play.
Mm-hmm. He's working us, Wayne. what was I getting at? Oh, yeah. So, and Diary was the first, because I listened to Diary before I heard Blizzard. And, you know, just hearing Over the Mountain as a kid, just, you know, completely taken away by it. And, you know, I still get the same goosebumps today. I'm going to say that a lot, but I mean, listen, there's a reason why this is my second favorite album of all time, because the songs still hold up. The music still holds up. Mm-hmm. Flying High Again, you know, one of the best, you know, radio friendly songs Ozzy ever did. I don't know if I hear it on the radio as I definitely don't hear it on the radio as much as I hear Crazy Train, but I'd be happier if I heard it more than Crazy Train. You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, I love it. It's interesting to call it a power ballad. I never really thought of it that way, because to me, when I hear a power ballad, I think of Steel Hearts, I'll Never Let You Go. And Ozzy ain't hitting a 7-octave, you know, vocal range. But I do love the song. Now, the next one, Believer, that's the song where I first heard and I was like, what the fuck? I mean, like, just it just sounded so evil.
Yeah.
And everything about it. And I was just like, yes, I want to come to the dark side. I mean, I'm wearing a Stormtrooper shirt that says Blizzard of Hoth on it. That goes to show you I love Ozzy and I love the dark side. And Believer has both of it. Little Dolls, it's I guess you could call that killer filler. I mean, it's definitely a much better song than No Bone Movies. And I think it's it holds its own, you know.
That's the thing. Even the filler songs aren't really filler songs. They're good songs, like not on Blizzard where there are filler.
And right.
And the reason I think Little Dolls and Even Tonight are referred to more as filler, even though I personally don't think they are, is because they aren't as intense as the rest of the record. Mm-hmm. It's a break in between, because from Over the Mountain straight through to Believer is just smashing.
Yeah.
In your-
yeah.
I mean, the first time I heard Over the Mountain, I think I played that on repeat 3 or 4 friggin' times before I even made it to the next song.
Yeah.
The first time I had it on cassette, I actually snapped it within a week because I used to rewind it and play SATO and Diary of a Madman back to back and back to back.
I believe it. Tonight is my favorite Ozzy ballad. I don't think he's written a better ballad than that. Sorry, Lemmy. I thought, you know, Mama, I'm Coming Home was a good song. It's not Tonight. I'm glad that song made you a lot of money, though. Good for you.
I didn't know he wrote that song.
Yes.
Really?
He co-wrote almost half of that album.
Holy shit. I had no idea.
No More Tears. Yeah. When we get to it, we'll discuss that. Okay. He's actually on the record as saying he made more money from No More Tears than any Motorhead release.
Wow, that's sad.
But hey, good for, you know, if anyone deserved the payday and recognition for his work, it was Lemmy. Mm. SATO. The funny thing about this song is that, you know, Ozzy was telling people it stood for sailing across the ocean. Meanwhile, Bob Daisley said, no, it's I don't know if this is factual or not, but he would bullshit people and say that it stood for Sharon Arden Thelma Osborne, who apparently Thelma, who was Ozzy's wife at the time, was being cheated on by Ozzy with Sharon Arden.
Yep.
You fucking bitch. Anyways.
Lewis from his first marriage is on the album cover. That's who the kid is.
Really?
Yep.
That's him right there.
So many things we're finding out today. And who's the woman on the back leaning over the table? Is that after Sharon Beter?
Yes, that's Thelma after Sharon Beter.
And there's where the hell did he go? So he's right there.
But SATO is just like, you know, I used to play that song live with my Ozzy tribute, and I tell you, like, hearing people's reactions to it, like, they were just so happy to hear it, because that's not one Ozzy's never played that one live, and it's a killer tune. Now, talk about the album closer to end all albums, unless you've heard Severed Angel, which I recommend everyone go to severedangel.com with Wings Anew, one of the best songs ever written. Thank you. But Diary of a Madman, I think, set the template for what album closers should sound like. It's epic. It's grandiose. It's melodic as hell. And you go through all the emotions listening to it, from somber to turning into Mr. Hyde and just back and forth, until at the end, you're just ready to, like, destroy everything in sight. I mean, that ending classical part with the choir, it's killer.
And the buildup too, you know, what's going to happen at the end of this thing? It just keeps going and going and going. It's just so cool. And I've been to so many concerts, and that's like the last song they play before the band comes on.
Yes.
And it's just so cool. You know, it's just one of those songs that get you pumped up, you know?
That's what we used to come out to with the Ozzy tribute. That was our intro music, the edited version, where basically we took out pretty much the entire song except for the beginning and the ending. Yeah. So this is going to sound random. There's an Italian horror film called The Beyond from Lucio Fulci with the score by Fabio Frizzi. Mm-hmm. The theme song for The Beyond, I can't help when I hear it, I wonder if he was influenced by this song in particular, because I get such similar vibes.
Didn't The Beyond come out in 1979, though?
No, that was Zombie.
Okay.
Beyond came out 81, 82, around that time. So, and this came out early 81, I think, because it was completed in 80.
Correct.
And, you know, but I definitely get similar vibes from both songs. And God, what a way to just close an album. A perfect, you know, I gave it an 11 out of 10. Again, my second favorite, my first favorite Ozzy album of all time. And I think it's the second greatest album ever done. And again, I have two copies here. The 95 one, which unfortunately is damaged by water, but it still plays. And this one is the 2011 version, which is basically a remastered version of this one. My one tiff with this: Lee Kerslake and Bob Daisley are neither mentioned nor are they anywhere in the booklet. But in this one, you have two guys that did not play on the album that were credited, which are, all due respect to Rudy Sarzo and Tommy Aldridge, you didn't play on it.
And it's clearly not them.
No, but I will say live, they pulled it off. I think live, that was the best lineup Ozzy ever had.
Okay.
I just, you know what it is? I saw that After Hours footage, and I love listening to tributes, but I know that it's a live album, but it's actually the segue album between Diary of a Madman and Bark of the Moon, which I don't mind talking about a little bit on this episode. But, you know, there was just something about seeing the live footage of Tommy and Rudy and Randy and Ozzy together. I don't know. It just sounded and looked cool.
Good. Great.
Yeah, I believe Bob and Lee. I don't think Randy would have been on the third Ozzy album regardless. He did not want to be a sideman.
Did you talk about Diary yet, Greg? I don't remember. Lou was just talking so long.
Sorry.
But I think it's safe to say on this episode, we're going to go with Diary of Madman.
Oh, hands down.
Yeah. I think it's a 10 out of 10 album. Or 11 out of 10.
I didn't think the verses, though. I thought we were just talking about...
No, it's not a versus, but I'm just, you know, I'm just trying to end the show.
Oh, yeah, no. 11 out of... Actually, to be honest, I find it interesting, and even though, I mean, I've dabbled a little bit, but I wouldn't call myself a musician like you two.
I don't call myself a musician at all. I'm a schmuck.
Just take the damn compliment. You sound like my ex-wife, but
I know you were married.
I didn't know he was married.
Take the joke. Do we have to analyze the Matrix police, E.B. White?
When you don't wait as long as I have, you analyze everything because you never know.
But I find it interesting that so many people out there actually have such a hard time picking between Blizzard and Diary, because while both are legitimately great, I mean, Diary of a Madman is just on this insane level. I mean, the playing, the lyrics, even Ozzy's voice, it takes you on such an emotional journey through every single song from Over the Mountain all the way through the title track. It's just, it's immortal.
It's just one of those albums. You could just put it on and just let it go. You know, and you're not going to be like, oh, I don't want to hear this, because it's just one good song after the other. So what are you looking through there? Unmute yourself.
So there was one other album. It was a live album released after Diary.
And I had no idea until earlier today.
Well, you probably wouldn't, because it's completely out of print, although there are new copies of it available on Amazon.
Oh, I thought you were talking about something else. I have that, yes.
Okay, for relatively cheap, like, you know, I don't think you pay more than $12 for it brand new on Amazon. But Speak of the Devil, this album cover scared the living crap out of me.
Oh, I know. And that is one of the first records I ever got, and my grandfather gave it to me. He's like, this looks like something you would think is cool and you'd like this. And I still have the record today. And yeah, looking at Ozzy, he's got that stuff coming out of his mouth.
You know, which is like, Jell-O. Jell-O. Now, Greg, your copy is coming kind of blurry. Is that Talk of the Devil or Speak of the Devil?
This is Speak of the Devil. Let me get rid of my background real quick.
Because Talk of the Devil is how it was released in the UK. This was recorded after Randy was killed in the plane crash. Again, rest in peace, Randy Rhoads. You were amazing in the short time that we had you. Thank you. And
this creeped me out too a little bit, because the guy here with the makeup.
The Japanese version, which comes with a bonus 7-inch of the band playing. Hell, I can't remember.
Of course, it's got the fucking Japanese one. Jesus fucking Christ.
Hey man, the OBIs.
Well, most of the time they sound better, though they don't always. That's the poster.
It's funny, he was talking about Macaulay Shanker Group. I actually own Japanese pressings of some of their stuff. It didn't sound good. I mean, either the way it was mastered, or I don't know.
The thing about OBI presses is the CDs always sound better, because the Japanese perfected the medium. So they would demand the original masters to make their own copies of it. With the vinyl LPs, it's kind of hit and miss. Depends. Sometimes they would just take the American version and press it directly without really changing anything, except for upping the treble a little bit, because that seems to be a trend over there. Most of the time, it kind of turned out all right. However, in terms of fullness and richness, I would generally take the European LPs over most 80s metal band OBI vinyl presses. But let's see, Mr. Crowley, and what's on the B-side here? I think it's I Don't Know. Yes, it is I Don't Know. Recorded during a sound check that they did before one of these three shows with this band with Brad Gillis on guitar. And I have to say, he does Sabbath a lot better than he does Randy. And it's probably only because I'm so used to hearing Mr. Crowley with Randy Rhoads. And Gillis is a good guitar player, but he's very different from Rhoads. And it sounds off to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's one of the first guys well known after Eddie to play a Fender Strat with a Floyd Rose. So, you know, his style was completely different from Randy's and from Jake's. But, you know, I thought Brad Gillis, who was on loan from Night Ranger, I thought he did a hell of a job on this. Now, this was actually, it's a live album, but it's not. So it was, you know, it was recorded at the Ritz, which is now known as Webster Hall in New York City. But you could tell Ozzy had a hard time with the lyrics during the live show. So he re-recorded his parts in the studio because you could faintly hear him cursing at the audience during the musical parts. So there was some doctoring, but you know what? Yeah. Who cares? It's an awesome listen.
It sounds really good. You know, it's cool. And then, you know, it's not Sabbath, but they did a really good job of playing those Sabbath songs. They did a really good job, I think.
Honestly, Never Say Die sounds better on this than the original studio version.
I'll agree with you on that.
Yeah.
And it's also the first time I heard any Sabbath songs too, you know, so it's holds a lot of memories for me, that album.
It's funny you mentioned lyrics because I can't remember who it was in interview with now. I think it might've been Tommy Aldridge, but he actually talks about how there was a couple of them where Ozzy had to have the lyrics written down on a sheet on top of the monitor. I know one of them was Symptom of the Universe because he just couldn't remember all of the lyrics.
Yeah. And that was actually my first time hearing Symptom of the Universe, and Sabotage is, well, it's become my favorite Black Sabbath album of all time.
Really?
So, I love that album. If we ever do a Sabbath retrospective, we'll discuss it in detail, but you know, we're doing Ozzy right now. But yeah, I you know, when I heard Symptom from this album, I thought that was the way it was supposed to sound. And I'll actually take Symptom off this album over Sabotage. But yeah, no, it's and I think this is what made me love Rudy and Tommy as a rhythm section. It was reason enough for me to buy the Project Mars album, which they're both on. And this I have here is the tour program that our very own Manny Mejias found and delivered to me for my birthday last year. Thank you, Manny. I have it right here. It's got some awesome photos in here. You could tell that this is the European edition because, number one, they, aside from having, you know, photos of Ozzy and Brad from the American tour, there's a little Randy Rhoads remembered thing here. That's one thing. So nice to threw that in. You got Tommy there. But the bassist at the time was not Rudy because by this point he quit. So he was replaced by Mr. Pete Way, formerly of UFO, and prior to him forming Fastway and Wasted.
Yep.
Which apparently Sharon said he kicked Pete out of the band because he was too much of a bad influence on Ozzy. Let that sink in for a second.
Not true. So both the reason he had to leave Ozzy and the reason he could not stay on with Fastway is because Chrysalis Records refused to let his contract go.
So in other words, Sharon is lying out of her ass again.
Yep. Yeah.
God damn it.
Absolutely nothing they could do about it. And at least in terms of Fastway, Columbia was not willing to buy out his contract.
Would have been cool to have actually heard him play on the songs that he wrote on the first Fastway album.
I have a demo, but it's only four tracks.
I'd love to hear that. That'd be cool.
Certainly.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, that wraps up our discussion of the first two Ozzy albums, the Randy era.
Yeah, it does.
What's cool about your tour book there, I'm not going to unfold the whole thing because it's like a 3x3 poster, but the pictures of the band members minus Pete Way and that Randy Rhoads tribute is what's on the poster that comes with the Japanese Speak of the Devil.
Mm.
Very cool. Very cool. So, yeah, let us know in the chat here, or this show's going to be over. So in the comments, let us know what you think of these two albums and let us know your favorite songs and all that stuff. So, but we'll be back hopefully next week with the next two albums, Bark at the Moon and what the hell's the other one?
The Ultimate Sin.
Ultimate Sin, yes.
Oh.
And what?
And just to tie this into another friend of ours that we all know well, Deceased does the best cover of SATO I've ever heard.
Really? Maybe we should ask him to come on the show.
Yeah, we could ask King. He'd love it. He'd probably want to talk about these more than the Jake albums. But yeah,
didn't think about that. Oh, well.
One more done in the records.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We had some good amount of watchers watching and some nice chats in there. Colin Madden and Pilot, which is Stan, which I've just now realized. And Catman, as always. So thank you guys for joining on the chat. And we will see you next time. Okay.
Demone.
Bye bye.
Cece. Come.
It's like, what?